This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the morning run, continues with top business stories of the day. Kusu Chuang, Tan Chung Han and myself, Sharad Kutin. We begin with the EPF. It's in our crosshairs as it eyes direct natural resources investments in a bid to diversify.
All right, diversification here. Now, not just geographical, but according to some of these more recent comments attributed to the EPF CEO, you know, it's also diversification in what kind of investments. And it's interesting because, you know, aside from, say, fixed income accounts for about 50%, 51% or so of the asset allocation by the EPF. Public equity about a third. All right, and so now the EPF, you know, apparently wants to go in, have direct exposure into the plantation sector for the reduced volatility. We've got a clip here from the EPF CEO, Dato' Shahrial Rizal Ridzwan.
Diversifying our investment strategies away from just pure fixed income and pure public equities. In the last few years, you'd have seen us expand primarily in the direction of real estate and infrastructure, especially infrastructure in Malaysia. The other thing that we've been also exploring effectively is on the natural resources front. We are already today one of the larger investors in palm oil production, and we've been looking at potentially the prospects of taking more direct exposure, not just through the listed space, but perhaps having control of some of these planted assets.
Once again, that was EPF CEO Dato' Shahrial Rizal Ridzwan wanting a more direct exposure as opposed to going through, you know, what they already are a shareholder in Sime Darby, for example. We also recall that they did pay down their stakes in Felda Global Ventures. So perhaps EPF wanting to go about it on your own.
Yeah, I guess it's a distinction to be drawn between their trading and I guess medium-term investments, because Dato' Shahrial is talking about long-term assets, and I think long-term asset holdings, so, you know, owning entire acreages and entire companies involved in upstream as opposed to, you know, trading in and out, yes.
No, and I also think it's interesting because, you know, he talks about the reduced volatility in the plantation sector. You know, obviously the EPF has a lot more resources and insights into this, but
I actually struggle to understand that because the plantation sector is directly tied to how crude oil prices perform. And, you know, crude oil has been jumping all over the board from as low as 20-something odd bucks per barrel to as high as 55, 56 in the last few months. So, you know, obviously palm oil prices, as with other edible oils, have also been just as volatile.
Right.
So I struggle to understand. Maybe on the long-term basis.
Yeah, perhaps. No, but then if you look at just what's been happening over the last few years with palm oil prices. So you go back to 2012, it was trading about 3,500 ringgit per ton. All right. Then fast forward to a couple of years ago, 2015, it went all the way below 2,000 ringgit per ton. And then more recent past, end of last year, back up above about, you know, 3,200 ringgit. Now, a few months later, 2,526. Right? Yeah, so you've got this wild swing.
Well, exactly. That's why they track oil prices. I mean, remember last year in 2016, November, the OPEC and the other oil ministers talking up production cuts and thereby sending, Brents from, you know, 20-odd something to as high as 50-something bucks per barrel.
And so just a few minutes ago before we came back on air, you know, I was speaking to a palm oil analyst, and essentially moving forward, you know, just for this year alone, you know, there could be a few, you know, key risks here. One being, you know, a resurgence in El Nino again that could hurt production and that could translate into palm oil prices. You know, there's also talk of an oversupply in soybean. Why do we care about soybean? Because soybean is a direct competitor to palm oil. If the oversupply, you know, starts, you know, intruding on the palm oil space, or at least the demand for it, then that could pressure palm oil prices as well. So you got all these factors going on. I think that's a good point. I think the EPF may be looking at this in the long term, you know, because that's what they do.
Well, the challenge, should Dato' Shahrial choose to accept it?
Wow.
Well, you know, but
his target is the dividend return to unit holders every year. So this year we got 5.7%. Last year, in the 5 years preceding this latest, has been 6%, 6.15%, 6.35%, 6.75% in 2014, and 6.4% in 2015. So we've kind of like been spoiled for choice in terms of return, spoiled for returns, essentially. So that's Dato' Shahrial's challenge.
Right, and also when you keep in mind the kind of elevated inflation figures that we've been seeing this year so far, you know, we spoke about this just recently. March inflation rose 5.1% on year, the fastest growth for the CPI high since 2008. You know, so it is going to put pressure on the EPF to, you know, fulfill its rolling 3-year real dividend target of 2 percentage points. What does that mean? That means the dividends has to be about 2 percentage points above inflation over the last, you know, 3 years or so. You know,
so he's got to do 7% should he choose to accept it.
Right, you know, and
no, but here, you know, see, he does.
It's not a game, Chuang. It's
not a game. Right, people's retirement savings.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and when you consider how last year's inflation was 2.1%, all right, this year, Bank Negara expected to be up by about 1 to 2 percentage points, so in the range of 3 to 4%, you know, so that's going to put pressure on the EPF. So diversification is key right now. And, I mean, to be fair, it's not just the palm oil space and also, you know, other agricultural or natural resources products. There's also talk about, you know, diversifying or having more exposure in real estate, all right? This time last year, Dato' Shahrul spoke about how they want to double their exposure to real estate over the next 5 to 10 years, you know, so by 2020, you know, and beyond, right? So you've got that, you know, we've got recent news flow. We spoke about it here on the show, how they have partnered with OSK to develop a property in Melbourne. So there are all these projects going on to ensure that we Malaysians have as comfortable a retirement as possible.
I mean, you know, EPF is such a kind of household name. I don't know how many people actually understand the size of this organization. It apparently has 14 million members and about 6.8 million.
Nearer 15.
Yeah, that's close to 15, right? But of them, 6.8 million who are actively contributing, 500,000 employers contributing to the EPF, and some 61 billion in annual contributions for employees and employers.
For me,
together.
There's only one number. It's the total AUMs, and that's 731 billion ringgit. So that puts us squarely, into the top 10 of global pension funds. So we're big, and we're getting bigger by at least 7% a year.
Now, another key number to highlight, though, is the fact that more than 50% of Malaysian households have no financial assets. And then on top of that, one in three Malaysians do not have a savings account. Once again, highlighting this huge gap when it comes to the level of financial literacy, you know, among Malaysians.
That's shocking. Mm-hmm. One in three Malaysians does not have a bank account.
Because they don't qualify. Mm-hmm. But, you know, obviously this
includes young people.
Includes children and, okay. You know.
Yeah, I know. And so in order to do that, and everybody go check out the KWSP's website, you know, and they just released their annual report. It's time to get educated, people.
Yeah, but it'd be interesting if the numbers are disaggregated. We just look at the adult population, because I think it's significant for the adult population. Though, I think with maybe everybody in this room, we all started out with a savings account, even as children. And that was something that was part of our developing financial literacy, right? Mm. To having maybe a post bank account.
Now, so there were also comments about, again, in terms of just kind of expectations for our the dividends for this year, right? Dato' Shahrul takes solace, you know, in the rebound that we have seen in Malaysian equities so far. So for the first, I think year to date, he says it's about 6 to 7%, you know, gain so far compared to 3 consecutive years of net losses in Malaysian equities. You know, so you know, hopefully that could, you know, help. Provide upward pressure for the kind of dividends that we can expect for this year. Now, interestingly, you know, when speaking about Malaysian stocks, you've got comments from Afin Huang saying that selective small cap buying is better.
It is, of course. I mean, if you look at it, the KLCI has come up by about 6-odd 7% so far this year in 2017, but the small cap index up by 14%. So clearly, I mean, if, you know, smaller, you know, means a bigger bounce. I mean, even though Public Bank, for example, you know, has a better profit from a year ago, it's not going to move the needle. But for small caps, absolutely.
Yeah, so this is according to Afin Huang, Chief Investment Officer, David Ng, you know, and once again, you know, asking investors to focus on the fundamentals of these small cap companies rather than purely on sentiment, because, you know, apparently there is some upward revision for earnings growth, you know, by analysts, and apparently this is the first re-rating in the past 5 years. So, you know, hopefully things are looking up, and depending on your exposure, either via the EPF or your direct investments, you know, this could be a good year for Malaysians.
The next, we have the news and then the opening numbers on the stock market and more analysis. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.